Good morning, everybody. Bit early here in Finland, but we're reaching commentary number 40, and I'm happy about that. And we're almost two-fifths of the way through this book, but of course, it gets, in some senses, more complicated as we move along. So we're on page 172, and we've come up to that section, which is all about the six stages of discipleship. And of course, these are also mentioned and elaborated in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. So a deeper entry into the ashram is what we have here. He finds that the relationship between master and disciple, as we read last time, is governed by law, and that there are certain definite stages of contact and grades in the desired rapport. These can be enumerated but cannot be enlarged upon, but you know, later he did enlarge upon them, and it is my hope that we will be working with at least the first 100 pages and maybe the last 100 pages of discipleship in the New Age. I think some of these things are on Makara in the written form, but perhaps in the video commentary form we'll be able to get into them more livingly, we might say. Okay, so this process begins here with the stage wherein a disciple is contacted by the master through another chela on the physical plane. And this is the stage of little chelaship, and it generally occurs around the time of the first initiation, even before to some degree. And this is the true beginning of discipleship, more than simply the path of aspiration, it's point of achievement. Okay, a path of, no, that's, okay, let me see if I have anything here on the path of aspiration. Okay, well, we'll try it this way. P-O-A-S-P. And that should be something there on the path of aspiration. All right, P-O-A-S-P. Excuse me. So, this is more than simply that, and more than simply a probationary discipleship, but it still is a probationary stage, I suppose, until we reach the point of accepted discipleship. Somewhere between the first and second initiations, we are being tested, and you know, to a certain extent, I think we're being tested in various ways all along the path, even the path of initiation, obviously, but we develop such a focus upon the divine plan and remove our attention from our own personal problems that we really can call it discipleship. We're not being so tested in our personality that it is the main thing. Now, the next stage is still occurring before the second initiation, still before the second initiation, the stage wherein a higher disciple directs the chela from the egoic level, and this is the stage called chela in the light, and Master DK developed his rapport with AAB when he was the guiding disciple. For her, long ago, we don't know how long, but, you know, it's probably got to be some, well, you know, it's got to be some couple of thousand years ago, I would guess. So the chela may know nothing of this guidance. The inner and higher chela reports to the master about the progress of the individual disciple. So the light is intensifying. And that light is thrown upon the life of the disciple, and upon how the disciple can help with the divine plan, upon the life of the disciple, and the manner in which the disciple can assist in his or her own very circumscribed circumstances, surrounded by limitation, with the divine plan. Now, as I say, we'll develop more of this when we get into the book Discipleship in the New Age. I would say that many of those presently studying the AAB work and studying seriously and persistently are chelas, chelas in the light. Yeah. It takes something, you know, fairly strong to be a chela in the light. And we're moving past the very beginning stage with all of its ups and downs when we move past little chelaship. We definitely, we are definitely DFL. We are definitely trying to master the astral body and overcome glamour. But a more strictly mental focus may not be ours yet. Okay. Then, this following is the stage of accepted discipleship, and he spends quite a bit of time in discipleship in the New Age dealing with that. And the master, you see, it's interesting because the master is taking responsibility, some kind of responsibility for the chela through this connection. The master is taking on increasing responsibility for the chela as these stages, as the first of these stages, well, as these stages pass. Maybe later, the chela is an initiate and realizes that the master's time is very valuable. Increasingly, this realization comes as we move through these stages. But the master has been observing the chela, and what did it say? Once every 1,000 years? Or speed it up a bit, once every 300 years, looking in, and reports have been coming in. Not that this should center our attention on ourselves. Let's just say it's long prepared. And the master is the one who is initiating these stages, responding to the aspiration of the would-be chela. Responding to the aspiration of the would-be chela. All right. So the vivid dream experience is a possibility. We know how many dreams escape us, and that they are really vagaries in many respects, and we have trouble piecing them together. But this, such an experience as this, would really be impressed upon the brain and the, let's just say, the soul would be helping to impress this inner experience upon the brain. A symbolic teaching, and we might say this can well occur in waking consciousness. And we'll point the way to the inner worlds, pointing the way to the inner worlds and the phenomena there encountered. Okay. You've got to have at least three dots. Right. Now, the thought form of the master, which can cause so much trouble, if it is the kind that is built by aspiring, eager, and essentially selfish students, can be used. But this is a useful thought form, and not the kind that is usually built by self-seeking students who want, you know, that pat on the back, and those, what it is called, good words of mediocre cheer and encouragement. Those words have somehow impressed me very strongly, because our first approaches, as DK has told us, are essentially selfish, and we find our ways into groups related to the master through the desire to advance and for more personality purposes rather than through a burning desire to serve. Now, here is a direct and conscious contact from the master to the chela in meditation. Okay, so this is direct contact with the chela in meditation. And who knows what might be said, but when we use such a meditation form as the as the master in the heart, we are setting up the circumstances for such contact. And that, interestingly enough, in the work with the Arcane School and probably the School for Esoteric Studies and those groups that are taking their lead from what Alice Bailey did in the early days, the Master in the Heart meditation is used. And we use that in the Moria Federation, of course. That doesn't mean that we are eagerly looking for contact with the Master, but the Master can use the form we build, even if it's of our ideal self. Now, finally, we have the definite and remembered interview in the Master's Ashram, and this is occurring usually within the hours of sleep, but is well remembered, and usually, again. Now, then says the Tibetan, this is definitely the stage of the accepted disciple. And, you know, it's interesting, we have the example in the instructions to F.C.D., who was the psychologist Roberto Assaggio, and he was a high disciple, and from everything that is said, probably an initiate disciple, probably of the third degree. You see how they prey upon me? These cleaners, I have to find a way to eliminate them. They sneak onto your computer, and before you know it, there they are, rearing their ugly head just when you don't want them to be there. So anyway, I guess it was quite a vivid interview, important interview about the way ahead for FCD, and Master DK saw fit to help, as it were, remind FCD of that interview and its content. And here, was a high disciple and initiate, I suppose, not remembering everything that had occurred. But we know our own inner life, perhaps, and we know whether these kinds of experiences do occur for us. This would be really impressed upon the brain. It would just say, he says, definitely remembered, a definite remembered interview, strongly, usually impressed upon the brain, and this would be confirmation of true ADSS, accepted discipleship. All right. Now we go on because we're coming closer to the initiate state. What we also learn here is that, these interviews do not necessarily cease. It's not like you have one interview that informs you that you are an accepted disciple. As the work gets more demanding and more significant in a world sense and more responsible, interviews can occur now and then, set up at the request of the chela. But let's go on and see a little bit. As I say, when we get back into discipleship in the New Age, we'll read what is more extensively said there. So this is stage number four. The stage we're in, having shown his wisdom and work and his appreciation of the master's problem. So, he has dropped much self centeredness. The disciple is taught how, and notice how reticent one must be. This is not an everyday chummy relationship. It's like asking Sanat Kumara what I should have for breakfast. Although, as absurd as that seems, there are those who think they are walking in the door of Shambhala to have a nice talk with the planetary logos. I guess they would be breakfast. The frying effect would be pretty strong. So the disciples taught how in emergencies to attract the master's attention and thus draw on his strength and knowledge and advice. Well, sometimes this may be necessary because the increasingly world work is demanding. This is an instantaneous happening and practically takes none of the master's time, which must be respected and preserved. And of course, if the disciple really does appreciate the master's problem and the vast scope of the master's work, then there will certainly be a hesitation, a reticence to importune the master for anything but an emergency situation. So this stage has the peculiar name of a chela on the thread, or sutratma. Is this sutratma a combined thread of consciousness as well as life? I think so. I think it's being used in a general sense because it's not just strength. There's knowledge involved here, and that involves a consciousness thread. So is the consciousness thread woven into this use of the term sutratma, thread soul, sutratma. And we have to determine what is an emergency, what really, the disciple or chela must wisely determine what is an emergency. It's not the everyday kinds of things which could be and should be handled by oneself. All right, so we are here approaching the third initiation, let us say. Following the third initiation, I guess there's another stage, but in a way one is still, you know, on the thread and can perhaps use that connection wisely for instantaneous response in emergencies rather than enter fully into the next stage, which will definitely take more of the master's time. The stage, number five, the stage wherein he is permitted to know the method whereby he may set up a vibration and call, a vibration and a call which will entitle him to an interview with the master. Well, okay. This is another thing altogether. You know, at first, the interview with the master, which may be remembered, was set up by the master himself and probably for some kind of confirmatory purposes with regard to this disciple's consciousness so that he really assumed the responsibility of the accepted disciple. This is another and higher level. This is only permitted to those trusted chelas who can be depended upon not to use the knowledge for anything except the need of the work. No personality, reason, or distress would prompt them to use it at this stage. One is called the one within the aura. And to me, as I think about this, you know, it suggests that the third initiation has been passed. So this suggests to me, at least, that the third initiation has been passed. And of course, you know, now that will take time, and the master working under the law of economy is very busy. I mean, he works under many laws, but the law of economy is one of them, and there has to be an economy of time as well. So it's all part of the steady approach into the heart and soul of the ashram, and this is dealt with also in the Discipleship 2 book, where we're talking about that long and pillared approach to the heart of the ashram. We can put these pieces of information together, but it's also that a greater work can be done. It's not to comfort the chela or to relieve his distress in the stress of service, where there is a real issue that the job is important and it really be well done, then such a chela is entitled, if he cannot solve the issue by himself, to set up a call or a vibration which entitles to an interview, and then that interview would have to occur at a time when the master's life and the chela's circumstances allow. Okay, number six, the stage wherein the disciple can get his master's ear at any time. He is in close touch always. This is the stage wherein a chela is being definitely prepared for an immediate initiation or having taken initiation, is being given specialized work to do in collaboration with his. I'm not sure why that blank is there. And makes me kind of want to, you know, go in here and see if there's a problem with the book. Sometimes in the transcription here, specialized work to do in collaboration with, okay, with his blank, blank, blank. Okay, and that's in discipleship. And let's see. Specialized work to do in collaboration with his blank. Okay, that's what it is. It definitely is left blank. So, duty, dharma, destiny, master, perhaps. I always have to go back and search for my bracket. Okay, and we don't know which word is deleted. Perhaps master, because there is a way that one can collaborate and work with the master. But maybe there is the deliberate removal of the word to not promote ambition in that direction. Although at this stage, I don't see how there could be, but as we at lower stages assess what the one within the master's heart might be, we might try to approach it in the wrong way. At this stage, he is described as one within the master's heart. You know, he is always within the aura, but in a still more spiritually intimate relationship, and his work is integral to the work of the ashram. And so this lies ahead, and this probably has much relation to preparation for the fourth degree. Which a degree which emphasizes the heart center. So maybe there's a connection there. Of course, it's lying, far ahead of those who usually read the pages of the Tibetan. He maybe trains people for the third initiation at the most, at least in some kind of public way, a way that is indicated in the teaching. But this is a further type of training, I do believe, and I think moves towards that sacrificial kind of work which on behalf of the ashram and the master one must undertake as one is approaching the fourth degree of renunciation and an immediate initiation. So, this is all the scientific process that is being prepared for, and there are probably certain steps with regard to these higher initiations that it is advisable to take or even necessary. There is a, let's see, how far are we here? 172. Good. All right. There is a later stage of still closer identification where there is a blending of the lights. And maybe we can just think of that in that way, but there's no adequate paraphrase of the terms used to cover the name, but we can think of it as the seventh stage of the blending of the lights. And the six stages mentioned above have been paraphrased for Occidental understanding and must in no way be considered as translation of the ancient terms, because I think if we were to take those terms to an Eastern scholar, they would not be recognizable. This blending of the lights, DK at some point has said, the chela is virtually a master himself. And DK is working, we are told, with five masters within his ashram. So this takes us through the lawful progression of our growing and ever more responsible relationship with the master. And we'll, as I say, be studying this. This has to be blended with the six stages of discipleship, which is found at the end of Dina 1, and a lot more is said there. Okay, so now we have reviewed really 7 stages of discipleship, and I would say that the most pertinent of these, pertinent to those who are the usual students for Master DK, would be the first 3. The little chelaship, beginning that work, the chela in the light, where probably the great majority can be found, and then the accepted discipleship stage. And he did say, you know, when he gave the figures in this book, that there were 400 accepted disciples in the world, those who really knew with definiteness that they were accepted disciples, and I suppose, you know, what master and what ashram they were working with. He did say there were many standing on the threshold of that stage, and given the probably 90 years or a little less that have passed since this book was written, there must necessarily be many more, given that the consciousness movement, if I can call it that, swept over the West, and, you know, coming from the East to the West and doing so much in California and then moving on across the world into the Western civilizations. So these are paraphrases, and these are not the names as they are known in the East. These epitomes or paraphrases are not the true names as the Eastern chela might recognize. REC recognize them. Well, such are some of the teachings concerning disciples and their recognitions. Okay, the kinds of recognition the disciples have and how we might recognize them, and it is valuable for aspirants to ponder them. So obviously this book is still much written for aspirants. It should be realized that though good character, high ethics, sound morality, and spiritual aspiration are basic and unalterable requirements, yet more is needed if the right to enter the Master's ashram is to be granted. Yeah. Okay. Trying to get my chronometer here going so that I do not overrun my time excessively and make life for the transcribers unduly onerous. You can only imagine what it was like when I would produce a program with 5 hours in it, you know, just to save time in the transition. The head of the transcription team told me one didn't even want to start. So I can understand that. So anyway, the masters seek that we will be drawn to the ashrams, that the personnel in the ashrams be filled out, that the book Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, I guess, be used to draw students towards and into the ashrams, or at least to help them qualify to be drawn into the ashrams, because these ashrams are points of expression for the hierarchy, and as they become more powerful, so the influence upon human consciousness is intensified, and the power and the consciousness, the love of the soul, will be spread more widely, as it must be, if occultism, and I like to call it spiritual occultism, will win the day by the end of the 21st century, as H.P. Blavatsky says it should, or even must. So we're trying to help with that so that the great thought form of the ageless wisdom becomes more current in the minds and hearts of those who are sufficiently advanced to see its value. Obviously, it's not for everybody, and he said that it would be a long time before the masses of people would be ready for occultism, and we cannot rush the process, though we can perhaps hasten it. When you try to force something upon people for which they're not ready, there's oftentimes a rebellion, and you do more harm than good. Well, anyway, onward. To be admitted to the privilege of being an outpost of his, the Master's consciousness, requires an unselfishness and a self-surrender for which few are prepared. Oh, you know, it makes one ponder whether one has made that grade and can naturally demonstrate that stage of unselfishness. The self-surrender is, you know, suggesting a Neptunian approach or Pisces approach. Not exclusively, of course, but those signs and that planet, that sign and that planet have that. But we're talking about an outpost of consciousness so that he can use the Chela in the world and perhaps work through that Chela, at least on the soul level, and then the Chela has enough connection with the soul to bring through what the Master and or the Solar Angel inspire. To be drawn within his aura so that the disciple's aura forms an integral part of the group aura presupposes a purity which few can cultivate. You know, these are, in my mind at least, rather solemn words and cause me at least, and maybe all of us, to ponder our fitness for such work. Anyway, the disciple's aura will form an integral part of the group aura. He really will be, really will be an integral part of the ashram. The Chela is now an integral part of the ashram. Through, I don't know, what can I call it, auric inclusion. To have the ear of the Master and earn the right to contact him at will necessitates a sensitiveness and fine discrimination which few would care to purchase at the price. And, you know, obviously, Master DK is here speaking from experience. He's been through this. He's been through this in relation to his own Master, Master Kutumi. Yet, a door stands wide open to all who care to come, and no earnest, sincere soul, not personality, obviously, who meets the requirements ever receives a rebuff. So we approach as souls and not as personalities. Well, that's quite a paragraph. And should invoke, or maybe evoke, it already does invoke, but it should evoke our careful attention and our willingness, at least to attempt, to live up to the requirements or even to become familiar with them, because DK talks about the price. He talks about purity. He talks about unselfishness and self-surrender. Let's list these things, these requirements. At the various stages, unselfishness, self-surrender, purity, sensitiveness, fine discrimination, self-surrender, surrender. Mm-hmm. So, let us measure ourselves against the requirements. What else can we do? And then attempt somehow to build in these requirements so they become a natural part of what we are. And so that we are not constantly just striving for them, but have actually achieved them to a degree. I mean, aspiration is good. It leads you there. It leads you in the right direction. But achievement makes it possible to actually enter the next stage and function at the next stage. And these things, as we can see, you know, real incorporation into the ashram, are a next stage for the majority of us. Definitely. There is no question at this time that those who are in any way advanced in evolution are having that evolution hastened as never before in the history of the world. So, you know, the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. It has a little wry detachment to it, is true in a beautiful sense here, that we live in very interesting times and demanding times, when if we can measure up to the opportunity, evolution is greatly promoted. And we have to take DK very seriously here. When he uses the word grave or uses the word solemn, he means that, you know. So this is pre-World War II. Remember that this is written pre-World War II. And the pressure that the solar angel is exerting, the angel of the presence, the pressure that the ashram is exerting, the approaching Christ, even at this time, although it was not yet determined in what manner he would reappear, but the approaching Christ and hierarchy were exerting pressure, because it was determined that hierarchy would at least externalize. So that pressure rests upon the different parts of our energy system, the head, the heart, the throat, and other areas, but certainly the highest centers. And there is a bearing to be undergone. I'm thinking of the second ray, the ray of light, bearing influence. And to carry the knowledge, to carry the light, is a considerable task. And there is a weight to it. He goes on to say, the crisis is so grave and the need of the world so great that those who can contact the inner side of life, who can, even in a small way, sense the vibrations of the senior disciples and the elder brothers of the race, and who can bring down the ideals as known on the higher planes, because ideals are of great value. The soul has its ideals, and I'm sure the monad does too. Who can bring down the ideals as known on the higher planes are being very carefully, forcefully, yet strenuously trained. So this is a great reality of life at this time in the history of humanity, and we are participating, if we are sincere, in this training. It is not random, it is not haphazard, it is not rushed, but careful. And via the power of Vulcan, I suppose, which represents spiritual will and forcefulness, the factor of forcefulness comes into the training, and strenuousness as well, as we are not going to find it easy. And I'm sure that anybody who has trodden this, as DK calls it, the thorny road of occultism, knows that it is not easy. And as they say, at each turn, a man must face himself, or will see himself in the rules of the road. This is brought forward, face himself. It is necessary that they should be enabled to act accurately and adequately as transmitters and interpreters. This is our Mercurian function. Because the world knows very little of the possibilities. Whoa, look at all that. There's going to be a big Olympics going on there. All right. The world knows very little of the ageless wisdom in any really responsible sense, and a lot of glamour, exaggeration, self adulation, flattery, all that kind of thing, surrounds the subjects when they are presented in what I will call the uninformed and rather irresponsible books by authors who have not gone far enough into the wisdom to represent, to realize that the issue is a solemn one, and exaggeration is not helpful. The crisis is so grave, and the need of the world so great. I mean, you just have to look at the news and you see how many people are suffering greatly. Maybe, you know, there are karmic factors involved, but the suffering goes on, and it is a demand that we find a way to bring that suffering to an end sooner rather than later. That those who can contact the inner side of life, who can even in a small way sense the vibrations of the senior disciples and the elder brothers of the race, and, you know, do we number ourselves among such people? I hope so. And who can bring down the ideals, you know, think about the monad on the sixth plane from below. The soul has its idealism, and of course we're in the realm of ideas, but when you compare what the monad knows and attempts to do with still higher sources, they are ideals, a higher form of ideal. And on the atmic plane, or is it maybe it's the Buddhic plane, the fifth plane in this case, subplane, we find idealism there. From the kind of energy focus in relation to which the Christ was presenting his Beatitudes. So ideals are not low things, and they can apply to any type of being. It's just that we call them ideals when comparing them with still higher ideas. If the emotional vehicle, again a six from the other direction, is involved in the manifestation of the idea, and if the level of understanding, if the idea is made more accessible to the level of understanding of those who have not quite attained the realm of idea, is made more accessible, then we can call this the presentation of ideals. Okay. Now he says here, I would like to point out certain factors and methods which should be borne in mind in connection with inspirational writing and mediumship, and which have a bearing on the writing of such books as The Secret Doctrine, The Scriptures of the World, and those transmitted volumes which potently affect the thought of the race. So he is actually here talking about the kinds of things which are communicated by different kinds of sources. The sources will be either reliable and related to the hierarchy and part of that very careful forcing and strenuous training that is being spoken of here, or they will be, on the other pole, erroneous and misleading and a waste of time and really an obstacle to the true progress of the reader and the practitioner. I don't think we have to worry about that with respect to Master DK's work but many are trapped by the promises made by authors who have not penetrated deeply enough into the true ageless wisdom. But there is inspirational writing for sure, and there is mediumship, and books are written via telepathy and so forth. What did he say at some point? Maybe 4% of it is really authentic. The interpretation of the process arises from many causes. The status of the writers can be overestimated. That's frequent. Or not sufficiently appreciated. And so the work is ignored as being one and the same with the authors, with the work of the authors whose status is overestimated. The terms used by the transmitter being dependent upon his educational status may also be incorrect or give rise to misinterpretation and hence, I want to say, illusion. It is necessary, therefore, that some understanding of the process should be found. So this is, we know how it is, and people fiercely guard what they think has come through them without looking carefully at the personality motives which may be involved and may be distorting the transmission and blinding the author to the source of what is apparently coming through from a very high source. It might be considerably lower source, and such authors don't like to admit that, or that they have more work to do in relation to discrimination than they have thus far done. Some transmitters work entirely on astral levels, and their work is necessarily part of the great illusion. Notice how he still uses the word illusion in relation to astrality. Now, you know, when we become more technical about the description of what illusion is, we refer it to the lower mind and the misinterpretation of the great ideas and the great thoughts by the lower mind. But still, the great illusion is connected with the astral plane, and sometimes he calls it the plane of the great illusion or the plane of the greatest illusion. Sometimes these words are simply used generically, you know, not with real specificity. They are unconscious mediums and are unable to check the source from which the teachings come. You know, they just have faith in this source and they present it to those who accept and who, for the most part, are gullible. If they claim to know the source, they are frequently in error. This is simply a factual presentation of how this business of communication from the inner worlds is actually working, devoid of the glamour and exaggeration and the overvaluation of it. Some receive teaching from discarnate entities of no higher evolution, and frequently of lower than themselves. But of course, if it's hidden and pertains to the inner worlds, it is overvalued. So let's just say that such teaching is often overvalued. And this is not realized by the author or recipient and transmitter. Some are simply abstracting the content of their own subconsciousness, and hence we have the beautiful platitudes couched in Christian phraseology and tinctured by the mystical writings of the past, which this is one of those amusing moments here, which litter the desks of disciples working consciously on the physical plane. I always like that phrase. Those writings don't really belong on the desks of the disciples. And when we think of litter, you know, and that which should be picked up and thrown away, it really shows us that lack of discrimination has piled up a number of books and pamphlets on the desks of disciples who should know better. But it takes a while to develop the discrimination to help us know better. And oftentimes we have to pass through errors and emerge sadder but wiser with regard to what we thought were valuable sources. Some work only on mental planes, learning through telepathy that which the elder brothers of the race and their souls have to impart. This is a higher form of reception and transmission. They tap the sources of knowledge stored in the egoic consciousness. They can bring through what the solar angel knows. They become aware of the knowledge stored up in the brains of disciples on the same ray as themselves. So, you know, this also can simply be thought, and it has already penetrated the brain of disciples, usually on the same ray, because that makes the access easier. Some of them, being outposts of the master's consciousness, become also cognizant of his thought. And already this, of course, is a higher stage and something of value, of real value, will be brought through. And some use several of the methods, either consciously or unconsciously. When they work consciously, it is then possible for them to correlate the teaching given, and under the law of correspondences and through the use of symbols which they see through mental clairvoyance, to ascertain the accuracy of the teaching. So these such disciples have spiritual discernment and discrimination. Those who work unconsciously, I refer not to astral psychics, can only trust and can use only trust and discrimination until they are further evolved. They must accept nothing that contradicts facts imparted through the lodge's great messengers. And they must be ready to superimpose upon the modicum of knowledge which they possess a further structure, a greater extent. That's an important one, because I have witnessed the receivers who have a conflict between what they receive and what the masters in reliable sources, let us say a master like TK, have imparted. The contradiction is there, and it's a stressful contradiction. Will they think their own reception is of greater value than that of what the messengers have given, or will they examine their own reception and try to reach an understanding of why it is at variance with what the lodge's great masters have given? Well, I think this is the time for us to, we've reached number 40, you know, so this is the end of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 40, and but goodness, what is it? It's in the fifth chapter, so it's probably 5.5. Is that it? If only, yeah, it's 5.5. 5.5, okay. Okay, so, and rule, 5.5 and pages 172 to 176. Just a few pages. And then we will have our beginning of A Treatise on White Magic video commentary number 41 and rule 5.6. This is taking a while, you know, to go through this rule, and we'll begin with page 176. Okay, friends, appreciate your presence. We're studying together, thinking together, and I'm sure you will have many good ideas, which are not included in the kinds of ideas that I try to present and the kinds of connections which I try to make, and that's how the light increases. So if you end up using this for your study group purposes, then your ideas will be as important as my ideas, and the light will grow. And I'm just presenting my thoughts to try to stimulate the connections between what Master DK says and other things he may have said, which give us a broader picture of how to integrate the many parts and pieces of the teaching into one synthetic whole. So we'll see you soon, and all the best, and thank you. Bye-bye.